The views expressed on the Making It Matter podcast are that of Gunnar Esiason, Julia Ray, and guests, and not necessarily those of the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Nothing in the Making It Matter podcast should be considered medical advice. Such advice can only be given by a physician who is experienced with cystic fibrosis. The Boomer Esiason Foundation, Gunnar Esiason, Julia Ray, and guests cannot be held responsible for any damage which may result from using the information on this podcast without the permission of your medical doc. You're listening to the Making It Matter podcast with Gunnar Esiason and Julia Ray, presented by the Boomer Esiason Foundation and GunnarEsiason.com.
All right, hey there, it's Gunnar Esiason, and thanks for joining Julia and I for episode 24 of the Making It Matter podcast series, dealing with disease progression.
Hi, everyone. Making It Matter is a weekly podcast presented by the Boomer Esiason Foundation and GunnarEsiason.com, highlighting the challenges that people with CF face and the people who face them.
Since Julia and I both have cystic fibrosis, we're mainly compliant with the National Cystic Fibrosis Guidelines regarding patient interaction and cross-infection by recording via Skype. And today's podcast was made possible by Novartis, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, and the Digital Credit Union. So big thanks to them for always supporting Boomer Esiason Foundation educational programs. So today's topic comes from a question that I got during a Facebook Live. I did a Facebook Live last week for the Boomer Esiason Foundation. If you haven't seen it, go check it out over on the BEF Facebook page. It has over 50,000 views already. So make sure you get a good look at that. But the question comes from someone that didn't have time to get to an answer or time to answer. So Julie and I are going to talk about it today. Here's the question, or rather the series of questions. My daughter is 20 years old, and she is struggling with the progression of her CF. Her first year of college was tough, balancing school, work, time, and friends with fitting in her therapy and her social life. I love that you stress a normal life. And she always was active in competitive cheer in high school. And now with her lung function dropping, it's hard for her to stay motivated to go to the gym and stay active. She started surfing in the summer and snowboarding in the winter, but she's in and out of the hospital so much now that I fear that she won't be able to stick with these things very long. I also fear that she's losing her motivation and don't want to nag her about her therapy, eat right, and exercise when she's exhausted and overwhelmed. Do you have any tips? And that would be much appreciated if you can give me something. So it's a pretty long, complex question. There's a lot of layers here. But I think we should just kind of dig into it and go through it a little bit at a time. Obviously, college is a difficult time for people with cystic fibrosis because there's a lot going on. There's a lot that goes on in the typical day of a person with CF in college.
Yeah, I think that was one of our first podcast topics, actually, was the college transition and how difficult that is. So I think realizing that that is normal in itself, just figuring out that balance is so important. And then learning how to incorporate, you know, the daily regimen and making sure you're keeping up your health into that lifestyle and into adulting is that next step that is kind of forced on you anyway. Like that was, I remember I didn't learn that lesson until I messed up significantly. So I think it's a common story you hear. Like yeah, I think we have the same story.
Yeah, I think a lot happens when people with CF go off to college, or a lot can happen. There's definitely a steep learning curve, and especially right around 20 to 25, at least in my life, that's when I noticed that cystic fibrosis was definitely progressing within my body. The disease is obviously progressive. It gets worse over time, and it does take a toll physically, emotionally, and a lot of other ways as we get older and we start exposing ourselves to more and more things. You know, in college, it's not really the best place for someone with CF because of just the craziness of it. That's not a deterrent for not going to college. obviously, it's something that you have to deal with, and really, you have to learn how to deal with it so that you can be successful later in life. Right. Obviously, with that change comes a major learning curve, as we have alluded to. My disease, I know, took a significant progression during my 4 years of college, partly because the lifestyle that we live in college, it's, you know, there's a lot of socializing going on. There's the nutrition takes takes a backseat in a lot of ways. You know, the college student's diet really revolves around fried food at like 1 a.m. in the morning. And obviously, that's not the best for anyone. But I can say that there with college and with the disease, disease progression comes a major chance for a person to learn and how to be successful in the face of adversity during those times.
It's also a time when you learn how to cope with it too.
Yeah.
Like you learn how to balance it in the daily regimen of course, like eventually, hopefully you learn that in college, but you're also learning, you know, that was really the first time I can remember feeling so that it was so apparent that my peers were not doing the breathing treatments that I was doing and they didn't have the daily struggle that I did. That was that first moment for me was in college. And that's a difficult transition in itself, is kind of just realizing, okay, this is not necessarily something that a lot of people understand or can understand. And I have to deal with this on my own and give yourself that space to kind of come to terms with that.
I think it sounds like you had that realization later in life than I did, because
oh yeah,
I had that in high school when I was playing competitive sports and being an athlete, and I felt like my days were just 2 or 3 hours longer than the rest of my teammates because I had to also take care of myself, whereas they were already done for the day, especially during training camp and things like that. So I think that moment I think comes in different times for different people.
Totally.
But
I think for me it was living with other girls for the first time.
Yeah,
that part of it was because, like, oh.
I think in a lot of ways having teammates and things like that in high school really prepared me for roommate living in college.
Yeah.
But I also do think that how do I deal with the progression of the disease, like in a mental way? First of all, I know it's coming, right? I know that's just part of what I live with, and the moment I start feeling sorry for myself is the moment that I allowed my positivity and my optimism to dwindle, which is not something that I ever plan on doing. So
right.
I think that, unfortunately, you have to find a way to power through the adversity and difficulty that comes with the progression of the disease. And for me, the way that I did that was by building a really strong routine every semester. Because obviously in college, your class schedule changes, your free time changes, and the way your typical day works, it changes every semester. So I think that I used that first week and a half of every semester to build a routine that I knew would work for myself. And another way that I did that was I tried to keep my class schedule as similar as possible from one semester to the next. Obviously, that's difficult to do, but on every single given day of the semester. But I tried to keep as many days as similar as possible.
Yeah, so important. Routine is vital.
I also found that trying to schedule my classes and my day similar to a high school or a work day, where I'd get up early, do treatments, and then have a lot of classes in one day, and then come home and have time for homework, socializing, and treatments, worked best. I didn't like days when I had, say, I had a class at 11 o'clock, I had a 3-hour gap, and then a class at 2 o'clock. I didn't like those days. I preferred to be stacking my classes and lunch and all that stuff all in, like right in the middle of the day, so that I felt like I had, as much productivity as possible during the awake hours, rather than just sitting on the couch doing nothing, waiting for class to happen.
Right. Yeah, I think I'll add on to that in on a different sense, is that like staying motivated, I think probably the way that I learned that was by dealing with the transition into college. Mm-hmm. And I learned that, in order to, have the social activity and social life that I want, and to pursue the goals that I want to pursue, I have to put in the time,
Yeah, exactly.
And it's the reality, and it's a tough reality. Like, I'm not going to undermine that, but it's also, it's pretty simple as far as 1 + 1 = 2. Like, you have to put in the time in order to get what you want out of life.
That's definitely the best way to motivate oneself.
Yeah.
I think you use your physical surroundings and your social surroundings as your best motivator.
Yep.
For me, my goal was always to finish college on time in 4 years. As soon as I got there as a freshman, that was my goal from day one. And I knew that in order to do that, I'd also have to do summer school. I'd have to take different class loads than the rest of my peers. And I'd have to put in extra effort in ways that weren't necessarily seen by everyone else in order to do that. So that was really what I did, was I set myself a long-term goal of 4 years. And I took each semester one at a time by accomplishing smaller goals. My goals were obviously performance-based, and grades and things like that. Especially as I got older, that became more of a priority for me not necessarily so much when I was focusing on the core classes. Like, I didn't really care what I got in astronomy because I knew I'm not going to be on the Discovery Channel discovering something on Mercury or Mars one day.
Right.
But I definitely tried to balance my schedule. The more difficult classes I'd put within my major or within my minor or within things that I found of interest, and my easier classes that I scheduled were obviously astronomy, or which, by the way, didn't end up being that easy. or, you know, classes like that where I didn't necessarily have to dedicate so much time, and I could focus more on myself and my health during those, those hours.
Yeah, I think that using that as your motivator throughout life, even after you transition out of college, you know, using your goals and just life, like living life to the fullest, really, as your motivator is the best way to come to terms with the daily regimen and tackle it every day. That's how I do it. You know, like, of course, I wake up and I'm like, oh, great, here we go again. gotta hook up to this breathing treatment. But that's, I know that I need to put the time in.
Yeah, I think it goes down to, we've talked about this before, but like when you get out of bed, it's the checklist that you go through. You know, am I feeling all right in this part of my body? Are my sinuses okay? Are my lungs okay? Does my stomach feel all right? And then you can go from there and diagnose problems and take them one step at a time. But I want to go back to the question here, and the mother obviously talks about her daughter going in and out of the hospital much more. I think if that's, you know, really a problem, can you talk to the doc, your daughter's doctor or team about allowing her to do home IVs or home care IVs if your insurance allows it while away at college? That, for me, that was one of the best things that I ever learned how to do. I learned how to really, that's when I figured out that I could do home care IVs by myself without the aid of a nurse constantly watching over me or my parents or someone like that. My doctor and my medical team trusted me to the point where I was able to do that in Boston, even though everyone else was back in New York. So I think that certainly gave me some freedom and gave me some help during college. And it also gave me a chance to do what I wanted to do. You know, I look back on one day, specifically my senior year, and it was freezing cold day out in Boston, and one of the ponds actually froze over, so I got to play hockey for a couple days on that pond with a bunch of my buddies, all the while I was actually feeling sick. So my goal was, how can I get on the pond with my friends and enjoy the time that's offered to me or allotted to me because of me being in Boston, despite me being sick? How was I able to do that? So I made a plan with my doctor and sort of figured it out. But that's one of those things that I look back on where I can see that I took the onus of taking care of myself and understanding the responsibilities that come along with the disease and when the disease progresses and how much more complex it becomes to really get out there and do what I want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is so important. I think exploring home IVs, it's something that I've done before as well, and it allowed me to do the same. And I think also acknowledging is something that I have started to do this year too, which I think this comment might be alluding to too, is the mental toll that it takes, that CF takes on you. And I think making sure your daughter feels like she has someone to talk to, either on her team or in your family, I just think it's important to acknowledge the mental health of a CF patient, and that it's not something that should be stigmatized, as I think it is right now. Just people should be talking more openly about mental health and how it's affected when you're fighting a chronic illness like CF.
Yeah, it's definitely super important in the ways that I think having a release or having something to get, you know, having someone to help get the load of it off your chest is probably a priceless thing to have.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of ways it does lessen the burden of the disease. And, you know, everyone sort of figures out their own outlet for that. For me, my outlet for getting CF off my chest or off my mind is sports, athletics, exercising. And it's also, in many ways, the podcast and the blog, because we're just talking openly about it. So I think it's important for people with CF to share their disease. Like we've been saying this for a few months now. You know, if you're living with CF behind closed doors and you're living with it in secret, it's going to be much more difficult, and by the time you do want to share, it's going to be a very steep hill to climb. So I do think that it's important for people with cystic fibrosis to get out there and share it and find a support system outside of the immediate family.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's a snowball effect, I think, if you hold it in for too long. I know that happened to me. I was struggling inside and no one knew. So no one can help if no one knows. So I think learning how to share with the right person is a crucial part in kind of dealing with the progression of the illness and making sure you can stay motivated. You know, it's hard to stay motivated when you're not feeling so great emotionally and mentally. So I think that's an important thing to address.
Yes, exactly. And there are other ways that, you know, external people can motivate people with CF. Obviously, the question here asks that, or rather, it points out that this mother doesn't want to nag her daughter to do her therapy or eat right or exercise. I would say that if you're thinking of it that way, if you're thinking about nagging somebody or if you're thinking about annoying somebody in that respect, obviously it's going to be a negative thing. So you have to figure out a way to make it a positive conversation, right? You don't want to make it seem like you have to eat right or exercise, otherwise you're going to get really sick and things are going to be terrible. You have to sort of incentivize somebody to do that. And I think you have to recognize, or people have to recognize, that living with CF is already a very difficult thing to do. Adding on the need to exercise and eat right and do extra therapies when needed may make the whole thing seem more daunting, right? So yeah. It all has to go back to the idea of self-motivating and using incentives and goals to bring somebody to the point where he or she can live successfully with CF.
Absolutely.
So I think this conversation can continue to go on, but we'll come back to it. And obviously, if you have any tips with how you've dealt with the progression of cystic fibrosis, we want to know in the comments section. Please let us know, and we'll come back to this topic. But I think the things that we've really covered and the things that we need to focus on and take away from this conversation that we've had are, one, figuring out how to self-motivate yourself, how to set a routine to help self-motivate yourself and create something that is familiar day in and day out, and then also using the external factors around you, your friends, your social life, the goals that you set for yourself in academics and your success in work life, things like that. Those are major things that you can use to motivate yourself through the progression of the disease. And here's the bottom line. I figure that when I stay active or when I'm moving around, that's when I have CF most in control. Right. I do think that is what ultimately helps me slow the progression of the disease more so than any of the medications that I could ever take.
Physically and mentally. I think it's an emotional release.
Oh, yeah, totally. Sure. I mean, when you're out there working or going to school or hanging out with your friends and CF is the last thing on your mind, that's when you're beating the disease. Like that, at that moment right there specifically is the one that you should take away and remember later in life.
Yeah. Yeah, instead of living with it, you're living in spite of it. And it's just something you're dealing with in the background. Exactly. When you make it that.
It's just not, as soon as it's not even in your mind, then that's when you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the topic for today. Now we want to transition to making it matter. Today we're not going to talk about someone with CF. We're actually going to talk about Erin Andrews. She's the sideline reporter for NFL on Fox. And Monday Morning Quarterback this week had an article about her. And obviously, she's dealt with a lot. She's had the crazy stalker court case that's been going on, finally got settled. But turns out she also was diagnosed with cervical cancer this past summer and still, despite all that, was able to do every single football game on Fox this year that she was assigned and will be working at the Super Bowl. So when you're watching the Super Bowl in 2 weeks, remember that Erin Andrews, what she's gone through this year and the amazing things that she's been able to overcome to get there.
Yeah, talk about a great example for what we were just talking about. She poured herself into work because she knew it would be a healthy coping mechanism and distraction. So it was, I read the article and heard a news story on it too. Like that was her choice in her treatment. It was part of her treatment. So I think that once again, you know, living life in spite of whatever you're facing is a crucial part of it.
Absolutely. So I'll put the link to the Monday Morning Quarterback article in the podcast notes. So definitely take a look at that. It's a great article, and it'll also make you feel really good about yourself because of the way Erin Andrews handles such adversity. So that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for tuning in for the 24th episode of Making It Matter. Remember, you can follow along with our weekly podcast via my YouTube channel on GunnarEsiason.com, JulieRay.com, and you can subscribe to us on iTunes. And finally, Julie got the Instagram back up and running.
Yay!
The Instagram has been in
so
hiatus.
Go follow it.
Yeah, the Instagram has been in winter hibernation for several months. But now it's finally back to life.
It is. So go follow at makingitmatter_CF. I won't disappoint this time, I promise.
Okay, so thank God that's back up and running. Yes. If you want to see us podcast about something specific, as we've actually been doing for the past couple weeks here, you can always send us an email at gunnersblog@assassin.org or send us a message on Facebook, either of us, a message on Facebook. And either next week or the week after, we look forward to having a guest with us on Making It Matter, so definitely keep that in mind. And I think that's all the news I have for today.
Thank you for listening.
This is Gunnar Esiason and Julia Ray signing off.